Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to our Valentine's Day special of Boots, Balls, and Bras. I'm here with Farrah Williams and Earth Upon, and I'm Beck Smith, your host. And none of us are wearing pink or red or anything.
I actually, Beck, thought you were going to be in all pink or red because you are the only one in a relationship, aren't you? Me and Earth are single, so we don't wear any colours on Valentine's. It's just another day for us.
It's just green.
Galentine's Day, that's what it is.
What is it? Galentine's?
Yeah, so it's just like girls just hanging out.
Galentine's Day. Well, happy Galentine's Day. We've got a lot to chat about today. We've got our first
half. Wait there, sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Beck actually has supported Valentine's with her pink pen.
Yes.
Thank you. We knew we'd find something.
We did. Look, you did bring your pink. I knew you would. You didn't. Never let the team down.
Never let the team down, guys. That's my motto. So we do have a lot to chat about today. We are going to be doing a WSL roundup. And actually, we wanted to talk about something that came up a few times during the week. Do big name players get away with more? And then our halftime team talk. We've got a lot of roundups. We have the Champions League draw that just happened. Conti Cup took place last week. And our second half, we're going to get into the international week. So let's get started. All right. So the first thing that happened was in the Conti Cup game where Arsenal was playing Man City and ended up winning the game 1-0. But where Lauren Hemp was going to get around Leah Williamson, in my opinion, and Leah just sort of leaned into her with her elbow to a face, shoulder to a face. Some said it was a red card. There was a lot of chat on Twitter and with different fans. What do you guys think? Do you think, first of all, do you think it was a red card? Do you think it was malicious? What are your thoughts on it?
I don't think it was a red card. I think from what I saw, that there was a change of pace. So in terms of the natural body position, she almost tried to like pull up, and then just her body movement kind of went in that direction, and it was an elbow. I think it was a booking, but I don't think it was a sending off. There was no intent. Not that I'm VAR, I was breaking down each moment, but from what I could see, there was a clear change of pace and body positions, and that's what made her sort of arms sort of raise up into that position. But yeah, I think it was definitely a foul, but I wouldn't have given a red card. I think that would have been harsh.
I do think if there was VAR, based off being off the course I was on with the referees recently, she would have been given a red card for it. I think if there was a VAR in the women's game, that would have been deemed a red card. Yeah. But in live play, when the game was there, I didn't think nothing more than maybe a yellow card, a bit of aggression within the tackle, and obviously the elbow was high. But yeah, I mean, she didn't get booking. She didn't even take a booking. So I think it was more a case of that. Obviously, you saw Lauren Hemp was holding her mouth, so there was definite contact there.
She's not one to go down either. But fake,
yeah, for sure, and I'm sure Leah wouldn't want to do that to one of her, for you know, a national teammate. Yeah. So I don't think there was anything in it from Leah. But I'm just saying, when we talk about VAR and decision making, it potentially would have been looked at as a red card.
Even with it slowed down. Yeah.
You know what, Earth? In live play, I didn't actually think it was. Yeah. But as you say, when you slow things down, things look worse when they're slowed down. And I think that's half of the problem. When it's slowed down and the elbow is high, having been on the referee's course, now I would understand it to be a red card or a possible red card.
Yeah.
As a player, before I went on to that course, I'd have been like, advantage. But as I say, the rule, like when you look at how they would measure, it would have been I think possible red card.
An interesting one too is because, you know, we had Ella Toon then did get a red card, and I was at that game. It was Tottenham versus Man United, and it was a great second half. First half was okay, but Man United went up. Beth England again on the score sheet, I mean, literally scored it from nothing. That was a brilliant goal from her, and then an own goal by Tottenham where Man United then won in the Tottenham men's stadium with a huge fan, you know, crowd behind them. But one of the things that happened during that game as well was Ella Toon, another lioness, got red carded. So you had Leah Williamson, where she clearly does, you know, make a movement towards Hemp. And I thought it was minimum a yellow card as well. didn't get anything. And then El Atun got a red card. I mean, raises a bigger question for me, right? Do you guys think that big name players feel like they can get away with more? And not just big name players, but bigger teams. So U.S. Women's National Team. And can I kick this off? Because for me, mm-hmm. I like actually had quite a strong opinion when I was playing mm-hmm. that I played for New Zealand and Wolfsburg. So our club team was, you know, arguably one of the best in the world. And our national team, maybe not as much. And we
get in there.
Eartha,
get
keep
in there.
Keep, hold your tongue.
The guitar just sprang to mind. Yeah. Go on anyway.
But we, I remember playing against the U.S. in the London Olympics in the quarterfinals, and one of my teammates went down in the box. And I mean, for me, it was a clear penalty. She basically got smashed by two players from behind. And, you know, our player, Rosie White, just kind of got up, and I'm in the back, you know, screaming my mm-hmm. head off. And it just felt like had that happened with the U.S. team, and they because they clearly influence referees. They're in their faces. They're Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe, and you're a referee, right? And you're, you know, quite new to the game, or you've been in the game a while, but you have no profile. They're scary. And I do think that they can influence referees and decisions and fans as well. So, yeah, that's why I just thought it is an interesting topic to chat about. What do you guys think?
I definitely think there's a bias from referees. And I did mention this when I was on the course of the referees. Mm. And it, you know, probably wasn't taken so well. But I say that because I obviously played for some of the top teams in England. And then obviously I ended up at Reading, which was in, you know, deemed one of the lower teams. And decisions that were made, and as a player, you know, you used to play against, when I was at Arsenal, for example, and you play against, I don't know, I'm going to use Reading as an example, and the players be like, yeah, just get that because of who you are. Mm. And you'd be like, what are you talking about? And you'd be like, really, like, do you know what I mean? Defensive in terms of like their thoughts around that or their opinion of that. But actually, when you are on the flip side, it feels that way. It does definitely feel like the top teams get more of the decisions than the lower teams. And maybe it is that, for me, I looked at it as that, I think the top teams are more streetwise. And what I mean by that is they're more like, if it goes out for a throw-in, you'll see a whole 11 plus a bench put their arm up to claim that it's a throw-in. Whereas the lower teams just accept it. They're too honest at times. They don't want to claim for that. So that, if you saw 11 shirts or and a bench all throwing up for a foul, that is going to give some influence to the referee. Yeah. Whereas if a team is like waiting on the referee to make a decision who is unsure without any influence, they're probably not going to make, you know, a decision that you want. So I do feel there is a bias towards, top name players, top clubs. I think it was the same when I played. I think it's the same now.
Yeah.
I think the more professional they are now, I think it is a little bit different. I do think it's changing. Certainly there's a shift in the refereeing. I think more in the early stages that some of the referees, as you say, they were amateur, but probably in awe of some of the top name players. But it's definitely still there, mm-hmm. for sure it is. But I do think it's improved.
Yeah,
I love the way you're all beating around the bush. It is what it is, guys. There is a bias. Like, let's not, like, it's quite,
they hated
clear.
To
like,
hear that, though. They hated to hear, because I was saying it on the course.
It's true. Like, yeah. We can't go around it. I remember playing for Charlton against Arsenal, and Arsenal needed to draw, otherwise Charlton would have won the league. Mm. We played 12 minutes of extra time. Wow. They were losing 3, we were winning 3-2. Karen Hills went for a tackle against Kelly Smith in the box. Didn't touch her. She basically moved, like, came out of the tackle. Kelly Smith went over. The ref said penalty for intent because you went to tackle her.
No.
We were like,
this
what?
It was a while ago, though.
It was
right?
A while
the referees
ago.
Have definitely improved but since then, right?
No, it's questionable. But no, definitely. Just in terms of, like, we can't beat around the bush. Like, it is, if you've got a certain name on the back of the shirt, like, they do think twice. Like, I feel like they've got that extra bit of protection in terms of, like, maybe what they mean for their country or their club or what they're doing for the sport. And I think, I don't know, conscious or unconsciously, they naturally kind of give favouritism to those players.
Mm.
And I think El Atun, I think people are, if it wasn't on camera and it wasn't, there wasn't that high profile in regards to TV, would she have been sent off for that tackle? I don't think she would have. But because there's video evidence and we can clearly see the intent, we can see the aggression and the letter of the law, it's a red card.
It's not a red card for me.
Bye.
It's not a red card for you?
No, I don't think it was. Look, do you know what's difficult? Obviously, there was two tackles. So El Atun tried to tackle her. She then got tangled in the tackle and then there was that shove to the floor.
Right.
I think it was I think it was nothing more than a booking for both players, in my opinion, right? But when you look back at it on the clip, right? Because I know that we heard Mark Skinner say after that he's going to
protest.
He's going to put in to see if they can get it rescinded, right? Which I would do that as a manager because I'm like, that's a real soft red card. Mm-hmm. If that's going to be a red card, you're gonna have loads of them in the game. Yeah. But if you then look at the anger in her face,
yeah,
and you take a, because there wasn't much in the shove, it was a very soft Farrah. Shove, but the aggression in the face shows otherwise,
yeah,
right? So if they do look at that and they look at the intent in the face, they're probably going to say it's a red card.
Mm.
So Urpa, don't really, look at me how, and say Farrah anything.
Dare you? You've it's not a red card. Off, you've just not got a red card. From the referee's court. It's, this is the
not
letter of,
every action no, 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 is no. a red card.
We're talking about the letter of the law. Yeah. If you raise your hands, that means you have the ability for, you're giving the referee an easy decision. It's the letter of the
no,
law
not.
In terms
no, it's
of
not.
Okay,
not
let's,
on the shoulder,
let's
not.
Talk about
not
the
on the
letter
shoulder,
of
it's
the
not.
Law. Let's talk about
not
it
not on the shoulder,
because I did speak to the referees about this and asked their opinion. Because for me, from far away on the other stands, it was a clear red because she got up after and went to shove her, right? Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting hearing some of them talk, because basically the category that it has to fall into is adopting an aggressive attitude, or which is a yellow, or a violent conduct, right? So for me, like, first of all, it's not something we want to see in the women's game. So I'm fine if referees are a bit more harsh. You know, if mm-hmm. if they're clearly coming back to shove someone, if they give a red and it's harsher than it needs to be, I'm great with that, because I don't want to see that in the women's game at all. We see it in the men's, but what I think there also is a higher level of acceptance for men in men's football mm-hmm. of what violent conduct might be. And mm-hmm. some might say that wasn't violent conduct. But for me, how often do you see women with that face mm-hmm. going towards a player and actually wanting to, you know?
I just don't think it was violent conduct. And I think the play acting, we also don't want in the game.
Play
which for me is shocking.
100%
holding your face
agree.
When your face was not
we
touched.
We knew it was coming, though.
No matter.
We knew the player.
Oh, yeah,
the
player, yeah, yeah,
game.
Yeah.
Like, that's couple, like,
so
we
can't
do,
say
like,
we don't want violent contact, coming. But we don't mind play acting, because for me, you don't want both.
No, I
but
agree.
I'm just saying, I don't think that was violent conduct for me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is, you're giving that
of course.
Referee that decision to make in terms mm-hmm. of, like, your action, like I said, whether it's yeah. like the minimum end of the spectrum or the maximum, like, just don't give the referee yeah. that option to make that uh-huh. choice. I mean, yeah.
you're putting them in a
international
position.
Player, you're someone like a role model that girls look up to. We don't want that sort of thing in the game.
That's it.
It happens. Everyone makes mistakes.
I don't mind it. I actually don't mind it.
She reminds me of
Kelly Smith. Like, you're just showing a bit of passion, that like, it means something to you. I don't think there was anything more than, as you say, annoyed at each other for the tackle. You get up, you get on with it. There was nothing in it.
I love the way you say a bit of
passion. I love it. I love passion.
Does everyone get that opportunity
everyone.
To have a bit of passion?
They should do. Why not?
I'm asking you, because I don't think every player gets that same
how?
Vulnerability in terms of, oh, it reminds me of, oh, I love it, a bit of passion. I know Mark actually said he loves that sort of thing, that it has character.
Yeah.
He said that, the manager, okay. like,
but you kill character. If you kill character in somebody, if you took Kelly Smith's character out of her play as well, if you took mine, for example, like, if you take players' character away from
how
them,
how many characters
like Rooney,
do you know in the game?
No, but I'm saying the problem is that when it's coached out of you, when you're in a club and an environment where you're actually not allowed to be who you are, right? That takes away more than half of the player.
But that's
for
what
sure.
I'm trying to say. How many characters do you know in the women's game? They stand out like a sore thumb. So people again, the highlights.
Oh, sorry.
Them in
okay.
Terms
yeah,
of
yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, Kelly Smith, Jane. Like, you can clearly name the people who are like, no matter what, that's what they do. So majority of the time, people do not have that character. So what I'm trying to say, where people have the ability to be given, oh, that's the passion, that's because actually, why doesn't everyone do that? Why isn't everyone showing who they are and how they play? It's the ones who sort of stand up, they're then given that extra sort of leeway. They say, oh no, that's because that's what they do. Actually, do you know what I mean? It's, again, we're saying in terms of females coming through the game, like, who are you? Is it being coached out of you by the manager, by the club? Like, and because the ones who do keep it, they stand out, and then refs think, oh no, that's just...
Yeah,
a bit about them.
And
do you know what
that's
I mean?
Just it, isn't it? That's the whole point of the discussion is, like, is it okay just because they're a big name or because... And actually, it's the opposite, that she did give Ella Toon a red card, where some think it might be soft. So I actually was quite proud of the referee that she had absolutely no qualms in pulling out the red card and just saying, we don't want it, we don't need it. Totally agree with the play acting as well. Back to the character thing, though, I agree with you. I think you have to have character, but I do think there has to be a line of you have to play within the rules of the game and the laws of the game. And there's a respect element to it. And I just find that in the women's game, we have that now. And there's a really small window of being able to protect that, where it's either going to go towards the men's and that's going to be fine and that's not violent conduct. Or we can now just crack down and say, it doesn't matter what it was. We don't want it. And
it's
going.
A red
card.
Like,
the intent is there.
Bex is going across there. Like, we know the more money comes into the game, the more eyes
on the
game. You reckon it's going to stay?
I think that we because we have more pride in our game, we have more players that are involved who take a stance. Look at the Canadian team, which we're going to talk about later. Look at the US Women's National Team. Look at all these players that are taking stances about what they think is right or wrong in the
game.
Wait
until those players go. Megan Rapinoe, the Alex Morgans, and then the new generation of players coming. They won't have that same care and passion to keep the game how it is. So they're going out of the game.
Yeah.
The Christine Sinclairs, these people that are there, that were there, like they're slowly going and whatever. And they're trying to leave the game in the place that they, you know, in a better place than when they came into it. Mm-hmm. But once they're gone, these same things won't be happening as regularly. In my opinion, I don't think you're going to see a massive shift in the women's game.
No more Sainsbury's boots bags. Everyone's going to have LVs.
It doesn't have to, but we've allowed it to. We've already allowed it to change. It's already changing. It's already changed from when I played.
Yeah.
So it's changing for sure.
It's changing in great ways, in the sense that the tactics are better, the technical is better. You know, we can run faster, we're more agile. You know, the change of pace. Definitely, yeah. we've seen that in the World Cup reports that they've had. So yes, it technically actually is getting better as a game. But I still think that and that's why we have part of the reason why we have these types of podcasts, right? Mm-hmm. And these are why we have these discussions, because we do want to protect the game and we do want to help educate fans and players and managers and referees, in that I think we can be custodians of the sport and maintain the vibe that it still has. I really genuinely don't think it will or can or should go towards where
with
the men's
money
game
is going to change that for sure. When money is invested change. The way it is, it's not going to stay the way that we want it to still be. It won't be like that.
And the issue with that is, I don't think players know how important they are in terms of the role that they play and how they can dictate how things kind of move forward and the decision making in it. Yes, there's obviously governing bodies who regulate stuff, but the players' power, and especially for like women footballers, who for them being professional is quite new. So they're most probably just really happy to be able to have this as a career and to do what they need to do going forward and be a superstar or be famous. But their power is so important. So if they don't want it to go that way, they have to unite and believe that they've got a voice where they can actually make change, because that bit is super important. But who's going to lead it? That's the question.
And more on that when we chat about the second half and the international week for sure, because it's really relevant right now. But just wrapping up the WSL roundup, Brighton lost 2-6 to Aston Villa, and we saw Jordan Knobbs get a hat trick, and obviously our bestie Rachel Daly scored again. And Liverpool lost to Leicester City, which means that they are still in last place, but they have 6 points, just below Reading with 7, which is keeps them in the game. Keeps them in the game. Okay. All right. Well, I think that wraps up pretty much our roundup of the WSL. Let's head into our halftime team talk. All right, so our this halftime team talk, we had a couple interesting things happen. The Conti Cup semifinals, where Arsenal beat Man City, which is what we were referencing just recently with Leah Williamson's maybe yellow, maybe red card, maybe nothing, which was what actually happened. And then West Ham got smashed by Chelsea, 0-7. And that's in the semifinals. I mean, I think we should talk about that for 2 seconds, because I turned it on, and I don't know, 15 minutes into the game, I turned it back off. It's not good football.
No, it wasn't. West Ham just didn't turn up. How do you go from, I mean, I'm glad we didn't put Mackenzie Arnold in our team of the week the week before, because it was like everything on goal. And this is not to blame her, but it's like everything that was shot on goal went in the back of the net. So complete opposite from 3 days earlier, where they put a magnificent performance in against Arsenal,
to then be absolutely.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wiped away by Chelsea. Yeah. Like, Chelsea were phenomenal, by the way. If you actually watched it, you could go West Ham were poor, which they were. But Chelsea were just on it. They were on fire. Like, they were so good. Like, that first that opening 20 minutes, the intent they played with is probably the best they've played of all season. But a semi-final, 7-0, it could have been more.
Could have been more.
Well, and West Ham didn't look like we're ever going to get a goal from the game or even back into the game or reduce the scoreline. But yeah.
Do you reckon playing a midweek game has anything to do with that in terms of, like, obviously Chelsea play Champions League. They used to play in, like, evening games. They've got that experience in terms of West Ham. It's definitely most probably a new thing unless it's a rearranged fixture or, I'd say, a Quanta Cup game. But that amount of pressure, usually you'll have, like, after a weekend, another weekend to build up for it and kind of get your set plays and get ready to play a big team. Whereas they played on the weekend and then it's back to now a knockout game. I think psychologically, I'm not too sure if they've had that experience or
psychologically, how well but I think it's also just the depth of the squads. And this is where you see that this is the difference for me between the top four and a West Ham. They just don't have that squad rotation. And those Chelsea players that are playing, this is where they get their opportunity. So they have amazing players that are sitting on the bench that don't get the opportunity to play in the league. And this is their opportunity to shine. So they have to go guns blazing, which they did.
That was it. They changed, like, what? So I think they changed, what, three of the back four that they normally have. And then obviously Frank Kirby coming in. So they made Nikipa, so five. They made about five or six changes, Chelsea. So they've gone from beating Tottenham at the weekend.
There you go.
To then being able to change pretty much half their team. Whereas West Ham didn't change any of their players, I don't think, going into that game. So they've gone in with a team that has probably had to work extra hard for 90 minutes against an Arsenal team that were trying to pepper them. So mentally, that is draining anyway when you're playing without the ball for long periods, which is what they did. And then they're trying to go again 3 days later against another top team. So, yeah, you're right. I don't think it's a case of them not being able to play midweek. If they were playing a lesser calibre team, they might have had a better chance of winning. But you go back-to-back with, you know, number one and two in the country within the matter of 3 days, you're going to take a peppering off one of them.
And good that Arsenal did pick up that win against Man City, because they then lost to them in the league 2-1. Lost to Man City 2-1 at Man City, which meant that they then dropped into fourth place. We didn't mention that in the first part. But now we've got a Chelsea-Arsenal-Conti Cup final on the 5th of March. Are you going to be covering that?
BBC. Be there or be square on Selhurst Park. Sold 10,000 tickets already. So, yeah, should be a good final. Hopefully there'll be more sold.
Good London derby there.
Nice. Good London derby. Yeah. And my particular favourite moment of the week was the Champions League draw. Because these teams that are left are just all good. I mean, AS Roma might have been the only semi-surprise in there. You know, we didn't have Juventus in there this time. AS Roma is also leading the league in Italy with 45 points. Juve's at second with 37. So they deserve to be there. And they got drawn with Barcelona.
My team. Barcelona.
Tasty draws, though. Tasty. I know, really. I mean, good. I'm already seeing Bayern beating Arsenal in
the first game.
You're calling
both,
it
as in going out. So yeah. I think Bayern will progress. Right. I think Barcelona will progress. I think Chelsea will progress, and I think Wolfsburg will progress into the semi-finals. So that was my predictions. But they're tasty. Bayern against Stanway coming back
against Arsenal. Yeah, right.
Against Arsenal. So as in back to face the WSL team. Yeah, so pretty cool. We've seen Lyon already. They took a battering in the opening game, didn't they, against Arsenal? So can Chelsea match that?
And Paris, PSG versus Wolfsburg was the last one. Yeah. We haven't really spoken a lot about the French league. You know, and PSG is sitting in second place, only 1 point behind Lyon. So they're, you know, very top quality team. Wolfsburg, you and I picked them to win the Champions League. You know, I think a lot of people will think that that game is going to be easy. But actually, I think the PSG-Wolfsburg matchup will probably be the most even.
I think that's going to be the toughest one out of the group. I think that is a tasty fixture for sure. If all four teams are playing on that day, that's the fixture I'd choose to watch.
Yeah.
Because I think it'll be the most competitive.
But actually, you do want to go to Bayern to watch the Arsenal game. Is that what you guys said?
That'd be nice.
I got some messages on that.
Yeah, my passport's just been renewed, so we are ready to go. Bayern, we are ready
Hospitality, please.
Hospitality, please. And a blanket.
And a blanket. And some hot cocoa. So those games, Bayern versus Arsenal and Roma against Barcelona, are on Tuesday, March 21st. And then we've got the next day, Lyon, Chelsea and PSG versus Wolfsburg on the 22nd of March. So that means we can technically go to Bayern for the first day and then sit and watch Chelsea play Lyon and Paris lose to Wolfsburg on the next day. And then I think we should go to Wolfsburg on the second round.
Can I use my Oyster card on all these trips? Because it's an expensive trip.
Yeah, no, that'll be good. Very, very good matchups. And just looking internationally as well, Barca is sitting at the top of their table with 57 points and Real Madrid is only 5 points behind them with 52. Like I already said, Lyon's leading. Wolfsburg is ahead with 36 points and Bayern Munich's fallen behind. They're at 28. So that's a big spread. That's 8 points in that league. And I think that was surprising because Bayern Munich was really gunning for the title this season. So yeah, both of them are really strong teams, but Bayern Munich's just slipped off a bit. They have a new coach this season and some really good players. And I know they've made some really good signings for next year that we're not allowed to talk about publicly yet. But yeah, we'll maybe see.
Are you sporting director for Bayern?
You are?
Are you sporting director?
No.
So does that mean that if one team gets knocked out, do you reckon they then kick on in terms of focusing on the league? Could that have a difference? Or
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if Bayern gets knocked out, you know, they
the gap's too big.
I think 8 points. Oh, 8 points is too big.
For Wolfsburg, aren't dropping 8 points. That means they've got to lose 3 games if that don't happen.
It looks to me almost like, yeah. So if I were Bayern, I would focus on Champions League. I would put all my eggs in that basket. And also,
you sound like you're on Love Island.
What?
I know it's Valentine's, but all your eggs into the basket.
It's Easter, man.
No, that's what they talk about. You don't watch it? Love Island?
No,
you need to get into it.
I have, but no. Now you have to explain what is the eggs in the basket.
When you put all your eggs into one person.
Ah.
Yeah, so you've just...
Rather than spreading the love?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. What would you guys do? Are you love spreaders or are you focused?
I'm scrambled eggs everywhere. It's the egg hunt.
She's not joking either.
And you're an all eggs in one basket kind of gal,
aren't
you?
That's exactly what I am.
All right, there's your Valentine's insight.
She's got a big ostrich egg, so it's just... into one space
full of chocolate on the inside.
Six yolks.
Fabulous. Okay, I think with that we can end our halftime team talk. And let's get into the second half, because this is really quite fascinating what's been going on. And it's obviously the international week, so everyone's broken up with their clubs and they're all in their national teams, and we've got everything from She Believes Cup, the Cyprus Cup. There's a tournament in France as well. And obviously our personal favorites, the Arnold Clark Cup, which kicks off this week on Thursday, where the Lionesses play Korea Republic in Milton Keynes. You're going to be at some of those games too, aren't you, Farah?
Mm-hmm. And are you coming to Earth, no?
We're going
to be there.
Nice.
Trying to get to
FA
the first
capacity.
FA capacity.
I will be.
Are you going to go to all the games or how many games?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I'll be going to a few of them.
Wicked.
Just checking up that you guys are doing what you're meant to be doing, keeping a BDI.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Making sure you're working. And
I'll be checking and making sure you're doing what you're meant to be doing on your board, I'll be checking and not sipping champagne and eating food.
Nah.
As to what we always see them doing.
That's not me.
Right. Well, I'll be running around in the tunnels doing the match ops for those. But really interesting, because Serena Wiegmann had said early on that she thought it would be really difficult for Jordan Knobbs, Beth England, and Lucy Stanforth, who we had on the pod last week, who said she was gunning for a Lionesses spot. Mm-hmm. Serena said it would be really difficult for them to force themselves back into the squad. And then we saw Frank Kirby get injured and Knobbsy's in there. And you guys, I mean, we were all quite happy about that one, weren't we?
I guess it's really important, like, that you let your football do the talking, no matter how much, like, you want to do. Everyone has these aspirations. But when your performance is... shows, then you can't be ignored. And I think that's another great thing in terms of women's football, because there's loads of coverage. People can't deny that things are happening. So she comes and scores a hat trick and she's, do you know what I mean, doing all the right things. And you just got to have that opportunity. So really happy for her. And hopefully England give her the right size shorts, because Villa's been letting her down quite recently.
This is true.
What do you think,
Fez? Small.
It's an interesting one. There were interesting comments, because it's pretty much similar comments to a year ago in the Arnold Clark Cup when the Lionesses won it, and she did a a similar statement that this is pretty, they asked her about the squad, can anybody break into the squad? And she pretty much was like, I'm pretty much there or thereabouts with the squad I have. So she's pretty consistent with that. Of course, never say never in terms of, as you say there, if you're performing, you can't be ignored. It's an interesting one because Frank Kirby, it's like, you know, she hasn't played that much for Chelsea this year because of injuries. She comes back into the game, actually started really well against West Ham and then picked up a, I don't know what the injury was. I don't know what it looked like. I don't know if it's a knee, I don't know, hamstring. It was, there was no one near her when it happened. So it was an interesting one. She definitely couldn't come back on. But it means then her missing three international, you know, games, and there's not many more before now the World Cup. We all know what Frank Kirby can do for England. So she has that advantage that Serena knows, you know, how key she is to the team. And obviously, I think with Jill Scott now not being there, somebody like Jordan and her experience over the international scene. The only thing is, Jordan has not been to a major tournament. She went in 2015, but she was injured in the World Cup 2015. So actually, Jordan's missed pretty much most of the tournament. She went in 2013 to the Euros, but she was only a young player. The 2015, she was injured. She got injured did she play the 2017? I can't remember, but she hasn't been to a major tournament. So she will be desperate to go to this tournament and play a part. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm happy for her in terms of, you know, she's gone to Villa, and that must have been difficult leaving Arsenal. Yeah. She's been there forever.
Yeah.
You know, she's an Arsenal legend. So, but it'll be difficult now. I think, you know, as I say, Frank Kirby, you know, touch wood, it's not a bad injury. I think it'll be difficult for them to break into the team because Serena's pretty stubborn in, you know, in her ways in terms of what she likes. And you have to play a certain way in order to fit her style. And if you don't play that way, you don't fit. We've seen that with some of the players that aren't in the squad now. She's got a chance.
What do you mean when you say a certain way?
Well, we've even seen with Chloe Kelly. If I look at somebody like Nikita now and Chloe Kelly, I'm looking at Chloe Kelly because she used to be a dribbler. She used to be somebody that would take a lot of touches. You know, she likes the tricks. She was a tricky player, an exciting one. You know, you don't know if she's going to roast you with a skill or she's going to get caught in possession. So we've seen the delivery she puts in now. You saw Lauren Hemp's goal against Arsenal. It was a great early delivery around the back line from nothing. I mean, normally, as I say, I would imagine her to take the defender on. Yeah. But actually, the defender was beyond her. She was able to just wrap it round. So those early deliveries, and, you know, as I say, I coach with the 23, so there's three types of crosses that they like from wide players. And I think the likes of somebody like Kelly or Hemp are the players that can do that. Nikita's more of a dribbler, so she doesn't quite fit what is needed or required from a wide player in order to suit wide player from the opposite side coming in, centre forward, runners joining the box. So I think there's specific ways in which she likes individual players to play. Her 2-10s, how she likes them a little bit wider. I remember playing against the Dutch team, so difficult to play against.
Yeah.
You get pulled into fullback areas as a centre mid and leave gaping holes through the middle to play into your nine. So I think you have to be a certain player to fit into her way. But also in her press conference, she said she wants to try new things in this tournament because teams are starting to work them out. So it'll be interesting what she does
what her outfit is on the sideline.
Maybe. She always looks good, doesn't she? So I don't know, because she did say she was going to try a new style I'm not sure she will.
She has to, because obviously teams...
But she's always done that. She's done it with the Netherlands for... both tournaments.
I know, but I guess maybe when you do the first one, people might think, oh, you're going to change it.
But she did it the same way with England.
Exactly, so you do it again. So again, I guess in terms of their armour, they'll be prepared for if you do that. But she's got to have something else in terms of...
Yeah, like, I know options. I definitely agree.
Yes, they could do that and they could do it really, really well. So if they impact teams that way, great. But they have to have something else to be able to shake it up.
Just on that, I just think that in terms of the time frame between now and the World Cup to change... to adapt and add, I don't think there's enough time to do that and be clear on it, because we've seen Arsenal trying to go with this back five. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It needs to be coached. You haven't got the time. They haven't got the contact time in order to change massive details within their style of play, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think they would have been doing other stuff.
You think, yeah?
They would have been.
Look at her. Look at her. She thinks inside info.
Other than
I've heard this on the board.
They normally do. Even at the when they had the Euros, they had 308 days, and literally every one of those days were
counted,
planned to down to the last minute minute. So when the tournament started, everyone was
they were on it. They knew how,
and literally they would have been counting down the days from since after the Euros, and they're on it. Stone left unturned.
Well, it's funny because we did for the Arnold Clark Cup, I hosted a chat with all the coaches, and that was one of the questions I asked her. I said, you know, after winning the Women's Euros twice, Does that mean that there's just an additional layer of pressure for you coming into this World Cup? Because England is not slated to win the World Cup, like, no offense, but like on a global stage. And yet she clearly wants to. And I think in this country, you tell me, because you work with the FA, so you'd know, but is it almost a disappointment if they don't get to the at least semifinals final, win it, really? I think that's the expectation. Although I don't know if that's a fair expectation. And she said, you know, she was very PC in her answer, obviously, because she's not going to say, hell yeah, I sit at home, I can't even sleep in the evenings, like, because I just don't want to win it, and I don't think I can. You know, she'd never say something like that, but she did say, you know, that, yeah, there's expectations now that are on this team.
Yeah, 100%. I think in terms of the expectations, the aspirations of the country was always to sort of medal. We've done that in the Euros, so we're ready to, I guess, kick on and use that as, a foundation for what we want to do next. But I think where we look at what Serena's doing, it's not just about this World Cup. We've got the Olympics, we've got the next Euros coming up, and it's about actually the foundations in terms of players coming through, and not just this squad. So it's more about the war and not the fight. So yeah, there's loads of plans, but again, we are expecting, you have to expect to go out there and win. Anything less than that is, I guess, you're already setting up to fail. So you want to win the World Cup. That's the next big challenge. How do you do that? Who are we up against? And all the planning would have gone in place for us to be able to execute that. It's about how does it come together on the day. So
hard too for managers to say, yes, I will look at the development of players and those coming in, when they know that their job is also on the line if they lose. So they're giving that balance of giving the younger players that opportunity and also just winning games. But I don't think they're mutually exclusive, obviously, but it's really great to have the backing of the FA to be able to.
They've professionalized more their 23s now. So I obviously was on the placement coaching with the
23s. Are you still doing that? Like, what's going on with that?
I took a break. My health is more important right now to try and flip podcast. Everything in between. Yeah. But it was interesting because, and the reason why I did take the break, because they were going more down the professional route. So whereas before, every time there was an international camp, they'd go away in that camp, but it would just be like, I don't know, say a 10-day camp, you play the same team twice. Now they're pretty much mirror imaging what the senior would do. So if they played one game in the UK, they would travel the next day and go and play abroad. So they get used to the traveling, having to rest, recover and go again, which they don't get that exposure. And that's why the gap between 23s and senior, they're trying to bridge it in terms of that. So that, for me, is a lot better, the calibre of the 23s now that are playing in terms of the international teams that they have around the world that they are competing against are better. So they would play against the same teams, which obviously isn't good. You get used to playing against that team. And all now, so that's a lot better. But there's still a gap. There's still a gap between some of these 23 players that are not ready for senior football. That's my opinion of it, having been there. Some are getting closer. Some are promised regular playing time in WSL. And if they're not getting that, then the bridge becomes even further apart between 23's football and senior international. We've seen, is it Blinkeld Brown? Is that her name at Villa? She's a centre mid, unbelievable player. And one that I was looking forward to this year. She's now broken to the 23s. The problem is now they've got Kenza Dali, they've got Jordan Nobbs and Lucy Staniforth. Carla is somebody that rates her really highly. And I would expect her to find a way. But we've seen she was out of the team at the weekend. So already you're starting to see now, okay, so to sacrifice success over development of youth, the younger player will sit on the bench. We bring the more senior players in because they want instant results. So
just to add to that, just quickly, I think it's not just about what we're doing here. Like, we're always looking at what is the good practice that's happening like across the world. Like, what are others doing? Because we don't want to...
Look at Canada then.
Get caught... I ain't doing anything. Get caught short in terms of their youth development. And like you said, that replication of what's happening for both the youth team and seniors. So if they do need to step up, it's not something that's new. You've been doing this. It's about giving that confidence, and that's how you have that player management piece in terms of like, I think you're good enough, you're selected. Like, go out and show what you can do, whether that's the bases or the ones that are coming through. Like, it's really, really exciting. So
that's great. It's really good. It's nice to hear the like behind the scenes too, what actually is happening, how the FA is supporting and how you guys are thinking, both from, you know, a coach that's coached there. And
the
also
FA will always do that, Bex. I mean, I remember when we were players, they are always looking for the next crop of players, so they're always looking to develop. Like, every time we used to go to tournaments, they want that budget to be spent on development, youth development. But now the game's changed and they're more professional, so it's the top end players now that want the money as opposed to the foundations of the the development of players. So mm-hmm. there's been a shift in that. I know when we were players, I said every bit of money would be invested down there. And it's being spent more at the top now.
So on that, because you yeah. did mention Canada mm-hmm. and where money is being spent. If you guys haven't heard, the Canadian women's national team decided to strike because they had found out that the budgets between the men's and the women's teams were so vast last year. Which is an interesting point because obviously the men were at the World Cup. But then also that it's come out that they haven't been paid for last year's work. And so they decided that they wanted to strike. And then not only 2 days later, they've been now forced, quote unquote, forced back to work because their strike would be unlawful, according to the Canadian FA. And they, you know, for me, I think, lots of things come up when this happened, you know, in my head. It's like, first of all, how can you run a budget and not be paying your players? And especially in the climate and environment that we're in, where mm-hmm. female players are not going to be silent, to your point, Eartha, about players' power and importance. But secondly, how does this go so wrong when you don't have a budget for the team and you're telling them 6 months out of the World Cup, sorry, we're just going to have to cut back on all these games? So they're going into the game on Thursday against U.S. Women's National Team because they feel, well, they have to. Otherwise, there's legal action and they'd have to pay apparently millions to the Federation if they were to strike. Thoughts on this? Because it's a very interesting topic.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting for one. I think that the whole not being paid, it's not okay. That it shouldn't be accepted. But it's interesting because we've seen the success of the Lionesses, right? They started to make progress back in 2015, 2013, when they got knocked out of the Euros. They really wanted us to kick on. And they went to the World Cup. You get the bronze medal. They then go the following year to the Euros, the semi-final. And they really, and they only won the Euros because of the investment that was put in from the FA yeah. and clubs. So that investment obviously helped the development of players. It gives them more time, contact time with the ball, and they progressed and got better. And then they win the Euros. Now, Canada with, you know, not a great budget, are Olympic champions.
Yeah.
Olympic champions going to a World Cup, a year of not being paid. You'd think that a team that weren't expected to go to the Olympics and win, so have done that, you'd want them to kick on as a national team and you'd want their FA to get behind them and really support them and to see what can they, you know, how can they improve that? How can we now go as Olympic champions and really progress into the World Cup and see how far they can go in that? So it's interesting that there hasn't been an added support since becoming Olympic champions. You just imagine that's a natural progression to do that. Mm. Investment in the team that are showing that there's potential there. So it's an interesting one. I mean, it's a horrible one for the players because players don't want to strike.
Yeah.
Players want to represent their country. You know, it's the best and the biggest thing to do as any sports person to wear, you know, your national shirt and go out there and represent. So for them, it will be difficult. But also, it's also difficult to be unpaid for a whole year yeah. in a crisis that we're in. So there's, yeah, I don't know.
I think it's interesting you say, like, they go to the Olympics not expecting to win. So when you look at the national governing body or Canada Soccer, whatever it is, have they planned financially to have that budget available to pay? So sometimes it's not even they don't want to pay. Actually, financially, there isn't that payroll to be able to do it. But that's where I guess you've got to come in with other investments, get other like people involved that are able to sort of bridge that gap and bring the game where you want it to. Look at the success with the men in the World Cup. And I guess from an outsider, how important is football or soccer to Canada? It's yeah. not even like one of their main sports. So for them,
we can't keep comparing it to Earth. I don't like that comparison. Oh, the men get this X amount of money investment. I'm saying, but on there, we said it, right?
They are. I'm saying in terms of like, no one looks at Canada as a footballing right. country.
Oh, no.
So what I'm trying to say is in terms of like
ice hockey.
Football, yeah. football in Canada is not even really important.
Well, they did host the 2015 Women's World
That's what
Cup.
I'm saying. So it's a progression you would yeah. think that they would yeah. want to kick on
that
from
that
it.
That was what they were hoping
that was big.
To change that perception. Because you're right.
That's no, where they that's where they trialled right. VAR and then all the other, like, where they was using artificial pitches and all all
yes,
that sort of
exactly.
like that tells you that they're not even serious about life. Mm. What are you doing using that pitch? Like,
tell me about it.
Amen.
I saw that. I was like, okay, you're just trying to
tell
again,
my effort. Kind of,
try having worked there when that was coming.
Try
out,
having played there, the ball bounces over.
But this is my whole
no,
point.
No, there's no difference between
there is when you do a slide and you get burns.
Like, that would never happen in a country where football is serious.
Serious
like
yeah.
what? How can you be playing on Astro? That doesn't make any sense. And that's what I'm trying to say in terms of like, how seriously do they take that sport? How much investment have they really looked in terms of developing the game? Yes, obviously now there's such a boom around it. They know there's opportunity in terms of making money and money and capital, but it's not really significant to them. So they're doing what they can. I guess they're put on more pressure because globally football is just massive. So it will always have a voice, but to them, it's not really. It's not, as a. I don't think it's taken that seriously.
Even but if think, it, but my point is that even if it's not taken seriously, the players will always get paid. So they were always getting paid in 2015. So they were to just not be paid. Did you say a year, Bex, or 6 months? What did you just say?
I mean, I have
so
to
just to
check.
Not be paid. I'm just saying I don't understand that. Whether you want to help them progress, develop, and reinvest more or less, that's besides the point. They're contracted players to the national team. They should be paid to play. That's all I'm saying. So that is, there's no argument to that.
I mean, the other thing that's really, you know, Christine Sinclair is arguably one of the best players of all time. I mean, you guys would argue that because of Kelly Smith here. But, you know.
Stats don't lie.
No, she's good.
Stats don't lie. She's top goal scorer in world football, isn't it? What's her goals?
Amazing. She is,
crazy.
And having played against her, she's horrendous to play against. Even for me, worse than Kelly Smith. But you know, some of the statements that she's been putting out about the treatment from the federation, and a lot of those people that were running the federation during the World Cup when we were organizing, have now moved on to the organizing of the Men's World Cup, which is obviously going to be hosted by U.S., Canada, and Mexico. So yeah, you wonder if there's been a shift there. But just the fact that you have one of the world's top players, you know, writing humongous statements about the treatment, and then, you know, 2 days later saying another statement about, you know, that we continue to believe that Canada soccer's cuts to the national team programs, especially right before our World Cup, are unacceptable. And we continue to believe that Canada soccer needs to do more to support our programs and our players. And unless we stand up together and demand more, nothing will ever change.
That's my point, though. Together, we're having individual players coming out and giving a statement.
Well, the Canadian national team.
No, we all need to be there. We're all not playing. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm. Like, there's no sport without the whole team. There's no sport without the whole team of referees and officials. When you have one person as the forefront, this is where they pick you off.
Yeah.
They think, obviously, it's a big neck. Like, it's got to be everybody.
But do you know what was good? The men's national team as well has supported them this whole time. And John Herdman used to coach our New Zealand women's national team, and he was the one that sort of changed everything. He's now gone to, then he went to the women's, and now he's with the men. So that men's national team is quite supportive. And then we saw Alex Morgan tweet as well. What do they have to do? Win a gold medal? Sell out stadiums? Oh, wait. It's 2023. Wake up, Canada soccer. You're on the clock. So you're right. It is. If not everybody's in that movement, it does make it harder. An interesting one. We want to hear what you guys think about it. You guys listening. So definitely let us know your thoughts on the Canadian women's national team. And also, we've seen a few things come out about a potential sponsorship with FIFA on Visit Saudi, which has led to an extreme uproar of fans saying that doesn't match the vibe of the women's game, et cetera, et cetera. But we don't really have a ton of time to talk about that this week. So we do want to hear your thoughts. If you've read about it, know about it, what do you guys think of a potential Visit Saudi sponsorship of the Women's World Cup?
I think they have a sponsor. So whether players like on, they'll do the work. They'll go, maybe Alex Morgan won't go to the Saudi before the tournament, but there will be players that are playing in a tournament that will go and visit Saudi. So it will happen, regardless what Alex Morgan's views, opinions, or whether the women's games views, fans, opinions are, it will happen. They are the major sponsors at the tournament, one of. So it's the same with the Qatar stuff, or all the talk before. Let's just focus on the football. I mean, I don't really have too much of an opinion on it, because I just think, you know, opinions don't really matter. Because it doesn't stop people from doing what is expected to be done of them. And I just think it will go ahead regardless of the comments from Alex Morgan.
People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. and I'll leave it there.
Well, I have a fairly strong opinion about the fact that I think that even though the women's game does need investment, it still needs the right type of investment. And, you know, for everything that Saudi Arabia is doing in terms of starting a new league for the women and, you know, apparently supporting, there's still a lot going on in that country that is pretty horrendous for a lot of women. So, yeah, I mean, should they be doing it? I think no, because I don't think that the women's game needs that type of partner. And I think that they have really nice partners that align with the brand values of the women's game right now. But like I said, let's hear you guys' thoughts. Maybe we'll chat about it next week if we get some
on really that. Good this ones. Is where yeah. we're saying, Bex, because so, I love it. You can see your passion in yeah. that, right? And I know that if we had time to talk about it, you'd go into even more detail on it. But as me and Earth said before, around the whole once there's money and where the women's game is going, they don't care about our values and what values we built within the game and how we wanted our game to look and feel for people. They don't care about that because it's about the money now. And that changes everything. Mm-hmm. So where you talk about we've got better brands and thingy that suits the values of the women's game, they no longer care. Because when somebody can times that value and money in terms of with financially by 10, 20, they're going to take that for sure. That's the problem.
Unless you do have those standing up and saying this isn't what we want in our game. So But for the money,
I can guarantee you some of these players that have never seen money in pound signs like that before will take that. I can promise you because it's funny. It's like they won't stand up, Bex, I promise you.
I just visually, you know that man that's at Parliament, he's got that placard and he's always like, get their Brexit, like literally. It's all about profit over people.
I'm telling you.
Like that's what it is. All right,
I want to hear the fans' thoughts because I hear what you're saying, but I don't think that means that we have to believe it, buy into it, and let the women's game go in that direction. So I hear what you're saying. I definitely do. But let's park that one for now and we can hear our fans' thoughts because I think it's a really interesting one and maybe we can chat about it next week. And that is us for Valentine's Day, Galentine's Day, whatever you guys want to call this day. I have my pink pen to celebrate.
Roses are red.
Violets are blue.
Farrah's in the studio.
She's come back at you. That's a YouTube thing. I was just watching. I won't see him.
I'm
way
done
into
with
that.
You too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Okay, so kicking into our extra time, we had some BBB fan questions, and we like two of them this week. One from Lou Plusey 546. Predictions for the Arnold Clark Cup. Farrah, you're going to be there as a tournament ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
Give it to me.
Pretty easy for me, I think. I think, look, although it's going to be a great tournament, you know, all four nations sit within the top 20 rankings in the world. So in terms of ranking, I think Belgium are 20th. I think, is it 14 and 11 maybe with Korea in Italy? I'm not sure how it is. And then obviously England, I think they're now fourth. But so in terms of the rankings, good opposition, different opposition. And we'll certainly give the Lionesses a challenge in different ways. But yeah, I don't see England not winning all of the fixtures in the opening game against Korea, then the second game against Italy, and then finish up with Belgium. Although Belgium, when we played them in the past, have been a tough opposition for us. Strangely tough for us. I don't know why. Yeah. Every time we played Belgium, they seem to be that strange opposition that on paper you'd think that, you know, we'd comfortably win. But for me, Lionesses win it again, and obviously that will help with them then building into the World Cup. What's your thoughts?
So England is fourth, Korea's 15th.
Is it 17 and 20?
Italy is 17, that's it. Belgium is 20, but Belgium beat Italy in the women's
Euros. Italy were a letdown in the Euros, yeah, yeah, for me.
Go ahead, Eartha.
England. Yeah, England's going to win. I think it's, in terms of building up for the tournament, it's a great opportunity for game time to try new stuff. And yeah, just looking at the opposition, I can't really see them being troubled too much, even though I think there'll be some good tests. But yeah, I'm going to England.
Yeah,
England for the win.
Tickets still available, guys. Just putting it out there.
Oh, that's true.
Let's get some.
Just opened up a new section, too. So, and that's on Thursday. So get in there. It's going to be really good. England kick off with Korea and Italy, Belgium. So that's that rematch of that women's Euros. I think England's going to win too. I think they'll have the hardest time with Korea because Colin Bell used to coach when I was in Germany. He was the Eintracht Frankfurt coach, and he's a very good coach, and he got Korea into the finals of the Asian Championship last year for the first time to qualify for the World Cup. So I think that'll be probably the best game for England.
Yeah, tough.
Nice. All right, next one. Do Man United have a chance of winning the WSL from Ellie.W9564?
You certainly can't write them off, can you? I mean, they're sitting top of the league now, so they're putting the pressure back on Chelsea. And I think, as we've said it previously in the pod, is that they've shown a different way this season. They found a way to win when, you know, last season they probably wouldn't have won those games. Tottenham, for example, at the weekend, you know, the last 10 minutes seeing out a game. They've showed a different experience
to their game. So some of their players, I think, have grown from last season. So I don't see why not, but my money's still on Chelsea.
Yeah.
I'm a United fan at heart, so I've got to say they've got a chance. And what I'm hoping for is for a club double. So, yes, I just think, like we've been talking about over the sort of course of the season, how the Lionesses have kind of come in and that leadership that's been demonstrated in the squad. Some great individual performances as well as collectively as a team. There just seems to be so much development. And I think Mark brings that new kind of stability at the club and aspiration. I think they're really looking at what they can do going forward, not just this season, but over the next sort of, I think, like 2 to 3 seasons as a club and building. So, yeah, why not? Mm. United, let's go.
I also see United as the club to watch either this season or next season, but I definitely think that they will be a crown on that club's head after in the next 2 years for sure, because of, like you said, the development, the fact that they kept Russo this season and she hasn't even really performed as much. You know, she scored what, 5 goals in the first half of the season when she could be a top scorer in this league. So I don't even think we've seen some of their players get into sort of second, third gear. So yeah, for sure. Thank you for your question, Ellie. So that's it for our extra time BBB fan questions. Thank you, Lou Pelusi and Ellie.W, for sending in your questions. And everyone else, we will be doing that every week. And definitely send in your thoughts on the Visit Saudi potential partnership with the Women's World Cup this summer, as well as what you think about the Canadian Women's National Team. And just really, whatever you guys want us to talk about, send it in.
Yeah, amazing. Shout out too. I want to give a massive shout out to Newcastle United Women. Who had 4,000 fans today, this week, in their 4-2 win against York City. I was lucky enough to go down and see the work that they were doing last year. Nice. With their foundation, and they've got some massive aspirations. And we know when we spoke to Lucy, she's looking at ending her career somewhere in Newcastle, and I'm sure the rest of the Geordies, like Jordan Nobbs, etc., want to go down there. So it's interesting, we're talking about Man United and are they winning the league. There might be a new United in town in the next few seasons. So yeah, a massive well done to the lasses up there in the cold north.
Nice. All right. Well, that wraps up our Boots, Balls and Bras podcast for Valentine's, Galentine's, whatever you want to call it, day. We've had fun. We've enjoyed our pink pens. And
now we're going on our dates.
And yeah, we'll see you tonight.
Lunch date.
Got dates, myself right? A date. Get
there, yeah. We'll see you next week. See ya. Bye.
Ciao.
Bye, bye, bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.